It's the Red Zone on Cards Radio 790 KRD, fueled by Thornton's.
Holy crap, I don't know who the hell we think we are.
My wife can score more than two buckets on 11 shots.
The kids are playing their tail off, and the coaches are screwing it up.
Go play intramurals, brother. Go play intramurals.
They're supposed to be mature adults, but they're really not. Who's the kid here? Who's the kid here? Are you kidding me?
Now here's your host, Nick Coffey.
Good morning and welcome in. Day two of Derby Week. A nasty, disgusting morning out there. Stay safe if you are out there on the road. It's really, really gross outside. The plan was to be at Churchill Downs this morning, and we made an audible, and I think we made the right decision because it's just gross. I just actually saw all the local TV stations that are out there. They're there all week, backside, and a handful of them are posting videos of just how nasty it is. So it made me feel good that we decided to say, you know what, need to be in studio where it's dry, and we'll maybe try again tomorrow. But if it's anything like it is this morning, then the decision is going to be easy, and it's going to be in the warm, because they've got us out there in a tent, which is fine. I'm not complaining about the setup that we'd have, because I'd prefer that than where they put us last time, just because I like to, you know, kind of be on my own and not in the middle of a walkway. But nonetheless, I'd be out there in the grass. It'd be covered up with a tent, but like the electricity, I mean, that there's power, but with the rain, it just would worry me. So again, we're in studio, which is probably best for the show anyway, as far as it being what it usually is. So that's good news. It's gross outside. So if you are preparing to hit the road, to go to work, to go to school, whatever it is you're doing, just be safe, because rarely do I travel in and have to like go under the speed limit by 10 to 15 miles because it just can't see. It sounded like it stopped briefly. I think Matt mentioned it wasn't raining too bad when he got here, and now I can hear the rain hitting the roof here at the iHeart Studios. So, hey, stay safe. It's a gross Tuesday morning, but it is what it is. What are you going to do? Hopefully this rain gets out of the way now, and we have much better weather as we get closer to Derby. I don't think the forecast looks great for Friday. Saturday doesn't look much better, to be honest with you. I guess, yeah, so right now, according to the app on my phone, we got an 80% chance of rain on Friday and then a 30% chance on Saturday. As you likely know, that could change at any moment. So just, you know, fingers crossed. I think we've had some Derby days where it was expected to be terrible and it wasn't as bad, vice versa. So you really never know. Just, again, keep your fingers crossed. All right, you are in the Red Zone. We are fueled by Thornton's. Here on 790 KRD. Take us with you wherever you go. iHeartRadio app, listen live at 790KRD.com. My name is Nick Coffey, the marvelous Matt Allen alongside today. And there's certainly a lot to get into here on a Tuesday morning. And if you want to be a part of the show, we'd love to hear from you. 502-653-0790. Again, 502-653-0790. That is the text line. Questions, complaints, compliments, whatever you've got, feel free to send them in. We'd love to hear from you. Text line's been pretty solid as of late, and let's hope that stays the same. All right, so we had yesterday, I'm pretty sure this was the – I second-guess everything I say about Derby and Oaks and horse racing because I'm in my own head. I don't really – you know, I don't follow it that closely, and I've never necessarily claimed to. But I'm pretty sure yesterday was the first time they did the post positions for both the Derby and the Oaks at the same time, which you know, I don't know if that was – that's going to be something they do moving forward on a permanent basis. But nonetheless, we now – post positions, of course, matter. There are some that will tell you they don't matter as much. But the favorite here is Zandon, trained by Chad Brown, 3-1 favorite on the morning line, drew post position number 10. And I was listening this morning on HAS to our crew, Tony Cruz, Will Clark, and they have, I've got to be honest, I'm not sure who it was, but they've got all kinds of different guests joining them throughout the week out there. And somebody that works for Churchill Downs, so clearly they know what they're talking about. They'd mentioned that when it comes to the social media buzz, like which horse is getting more buzz via the content they post online. If you remember, Epicenter, That's the Louisiana Derby winner, trained by Steve Asmussen. It's now the second choice, and it drew post position number three. But Epicenter, I feel like for a long time, was the Derby buzz horse. But it, you know, wasn't as if it wasn't necessarily getting the buzz that you get from like favorites in previous years. We had a good run there where the favorites not only were winning, but you know, we were talking about a potential Triple Crown winner before we even had the Derby. But those two are still the favorites. Again, Epicenter is 7-2, and Zandon is 3-1. But again, I just found this fascinating. I'm not really sure how big of a deal it is, but it was just interesting to me that all of the Churchill Downs content they're posting on their social media, Twitter, Facebook, all that kind of stuff, like when they post the early morning workouts or just really anything as far as video and or pictures, I suppose, Zandon has become like the buzz horse that people are reacting the most to. And so there you have it. That's your update on the Kentucky Derby. By the time we get out of here today, I'm going to try to tell you which, again, you guys do make of it what you will. But I'm going to try to pick the three that I like the most here in this 20 horse field. There's already a couple that I've been eyeing, and of course we will have once again our Derby profiles today from our man Jody Demling. But for the Kentucky Oaks, this is a 14-year-old, of course, a 14-horse race, the Fillies. You've got Nest. That's a Todd Pletcher horse. Has won four of her five career starts. And Nest is the favorite. And the second choice is Kathleen O at 7-2. And undefeated Eclipse winner Echo Zulo is the third choice at 4-1. If you remember, we talked a couple of weeks ago with the folks from TVG. And Twin Spire, it was Twin Spires. And the Oaks race, of course, doesn't get near the attention that the Derby does. But it sounds like the field is more so stacked in Friday's race than on Saturday. But we've definitely hit the point now where there was at least enough noise about how this was a weak Derby. Like the field wasn't as strong to where now I think it's officially turned to where the horse racing snobs are letting you know you just don't know anything about horse racing if you think this is a weak Derby, which I know nothing about horse racing, so I'll believe you. I'll take you at your word. So, anyways, we'll have we'll probably try to squeeze in a couple of different Derby profiles today. And if you don't know what those are, Jody Demling does a good job each and every year where he will give us a profile on each of the 20 horses. And I'll be honest with you, I find these to be very informative for me. Not only does it tell me more about each horse, it tells their story, and it helps me sort of figure out which ones I like. And just so you guys know, I'll be able to share this with you tomorrow because I'm sure you're all very, very interested in knowing which horse my kids pick out of a hat. We do it every year. We've done it with my daughter for years now because she's six. My son is two. This will be, I guess, his second time doing it. But we cut up all the names of the horses in both the Oaks and the Derby and let our kids pick one out, and we bet on that. I think we usually just do across the board for whichever one they pick. And my daughter, she's in a little bit of a slump, but for, I think, the first 3 to 4 years of her life, she picked the winner every time. So here's to hoping she can get some momentum back. All right, I'd say we'd start with something that has been an ongoing discussion for months now, really a couple months, and that is Louisville basketball's roster. We'd have no additions to the roster. There are still four scholarships available, but we now know that Amani Bates, a former high school phenom, he has trimmed his list, and Louisville is included in that. And it sounds like Louisville is in really good shape to potentially land the services of a guy that at one point was compared to LeBron James. Now, obviously, when he played his one season at Memphis, he didn't necessarily have nearly the success that some expected, but if we're going to have the conversation, which I'm not really sure if we need to, because I think it's a no-brainer, you take this kid if you can. I don't know what expectations should be for him, but this would be sort of a splash-type land for Kenny Payne. And I'm to the point now, and I'll explain this, because I know initially it may not make a lot of sense, but this is the kind of guy that if you land a commitment from him, given the interest he had from other schools. And again, we're talking about a guy, when the pandemic happened, that 2020, the spring of 2020, Amani Bates was named the National Player of the Year in high school basketball as a sophomore. That's when he started to receive just an insane amount of buzz. And they were talking about him being the next Kevin Durant, the next LeBron James, because he was just a phenom. And from then, it's not as if he kind of fell off a cliff, but he enrolled early in college. He was a 17-year-old freshman last year at Memphis. And Memphis's season was a roller coaster, right? They struggled really, really early on. And then late in the year, they got better, made the tournament, probably should have beat Gonzaga. I'll give Gonzaga credit. They did what was needed to close that game out. But, I mean, that was a competitive game. And had Memphis made it to the Sweet 16 and knocked out Gonzaga, that would have been that. But for those who don't know, Amani Bates, when Memphis turned their season around and got a lot better and took themselves off the bubble, Amani Bates wasn't playing. He was dealing with a back injury, was away from the team. There was talk that he may not come back at all. So, anyways, if this kid ends up being somewhat similar, if he comes to Louisville and he ends up having similar numbers and similar production compared to his one season when he was at Memphis, clearly there'll be a lot of folks that say, well, you know what? You know, guy's a bust. It didn't work out. But this is the kind of, and I'm not sure if this would lead to more commitments, but this is the kind of get, if you will, that would have people talking about, wow, Kenny Payne in his first offseason, right? Just a few weeks on the job. This would be the first big get. And look, there's a chance Brandon Huntley Hatfield's better next year than Amani Bates if you get him. Who knows? Maybe Devin Rhee is a big surprise. I don't know how much he's expected to play right away, but the buzz, because going back to the conversation we had about DJ Wagner, like let's say you get DJ Wagner for 1 year. That'd be great, right? And who knows? Maybe you missed the tournament or something. And that would be, it'd feel like a big missed opportunity, right? But landing high-level players, regardless of what happens, you know, down the road, that gets you more attention from other high-level players that then may consider coming to play for you. So I don't think it's like a controversial topic in regards to should Louisville take Amani Bates. They have 4 scholarships available, and there's not a whole lot of great talent out there. There's good options as far as who's in the portal, but I don't think it's even a question. I think you take this kid all day, every day, if he's willing to come. And right now, last night, his updated list is Michigan, Arkansas, Seton Hall, DePaul, Louisville, and Eastern Michigan. Now, the Eastern Michigan connection is he's from up in that area. I believe Eastern Michigan is in Ypsilanti, which is where he's from, so that's why they're on the list. I'm not sure if they're a real competitor here. But the two schools believed to have the best chances of landing them. This is according to Jeff Goodman, who I would say is as connected as anybody in college basketball. Jeff Goodman last night, after Amani Bates put out his list of 6 schools he's considering, Jeff Goodman says he thinks it's going to come down to Kenny Payne and Tony Stubblefield, who is the DePaul head coach. So Louisville and DePaul, and there is a connection there. I'll share that with you. I'll put it this way. There's a reason why those two schools, there's something those two schools have in common, I should say, in regards to why guys like Goodman and others are saying that it's likely going to come down to those schools. And it's Nike. However, Louisville, of course, is not a Nike school. And we'll see what shakes out here. But this would be, in my opinion, this would be the first real sign that Louisville will, in fact, be able to benefit. And again, I have no clue if this kid pans out. Maybe he ends up being a distraction and it's just as bad, maybe worse than it was at Memphis. I don't know. I'm not putting expectations on anything with this guy as far as where he's going to go, really what happens. But given his Nike connection since he was a child, like a young kid. And by the way, Tony Stubblefield, if you don't know, he was employed at Oregon for a long time. He was employed at Oregon for 11 years. And Oregon, of course, is the Nike school. So when Goodman says it's going to come down to Kenny Payne and Tony Stubblefield, it's because he's telling you that Nike is the player here. And if Louisville's able to land this kid as an Adidas school, and it's based off of the staff's relationship with Nike, meaning Josh Jameson and now Kenny Payne, that would be the first sign, I think, that you could maybe not – it would be the first sign that tells you, yes, you are in fact going to be an Adidas school, but your Nike relationships are strong and they can also help you. So we'll get more to Amani Bates coming up here in just a moment. But some other things we need to get into today. We've got we'll start with, I'll just give you the docket here. on a Tuesday morning. This story is something I probably should have talked about yesterday. I'm late to this, but this is fascinating to me, and it just tells you sort of what we're in for when it comes to the portal and NIL. So Pittsburgh All-American wide receiver Jordan Addison, he won the Blitkenoff Award last year, which is given annually to the best receiver in America. He's not even in the transfer portal yet, and he may not enter it, I suppose, but there's already believed to be a deal in place for him to go to USC, and we have, to my knowledge, the first time, maybe this has happened elsewhere behind the scenes, but Pat Narduzzi, the Pittsburgh head coach, reached out directly to Lincoln Riley, who is now the USC coach, and basically called him out for tampering. And this is the new world we're in, where you can be not in the portal, playing elsewhere. And the same thing happened with Tyler Harrell, the Louisville receiver. Didn't get as much national attention because it's Tyler Harrell, not a guy who just won the award for National Receiver of the Year. But I'll still stand by what I've said for weeks now. This is adding to the entertainment value. Now, if you're a Pittsburgh fan, this sucks. And there's really not anything you can do about it. So I do sympathize in that regard. But if we've got, you know, free agency, essentially, to me, it's fascinating. But this guy, what this young man, Jordan Addison, is apparently about, the deal he's about to get from USC, if in fact he does enter the portal and then moves and goes there, he's going to make more money playing at USC than his quarterback who just got drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers in the first round. It's unbelievable. It's wild how quickly this thing has taken off. Not just this specific scenario with this young man, but just with, like, same thing happened with Tyler Harrell. Like, he wasn't in the portal, right? And sure enough, after Louisville spring game, it was out there. Hey, Alabama's interested in this kid. They want him. And I don't know what NIL deal was able to influence him. I really don't know anything about that. I know Louisville tried to keep Tyler Harrell with an NIL deal, but he got wind. Hey, you want to put your name in the portal? Nick Saban and Alabama will come and get you, and they're also going to probably give you a nice NIL package. And there's nothing you can do. And you know, it does suck for Louisville because I think they lost their best receiver. But at the same point in time, it doesn't. He should still be able to play wherever he wants. But I just cannot see a scenario where the NCAA has the resources and ability to stop tampering. I just don't. I don't know how they can. I mean, there's always going to be ways around it through back-channel communication, and these players at other schools are going to find out, hey, you want to go in the portal? This school wants you, and they'll offer you this and that. And it's just going to lead to guys moving around all the time, and coaches are complaining, and I get it. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I will eat crow and say, you know what? Dead wrong. I thought this would add to the entertainment value of college sports with free agency and hearing about what kind of contracts these guys get. Maybe it'll ruin college sports. A lot of you guys seem to think that. I don't, but only time will tell. So we'll get to that story. Also, I'd say one of the biggest talking points regarding the NFL draft over the weekend was the lack of quarterback buzz. You only had one guy taken in the first round. And even the guys that were taken, I do think there's some good value late with guys like Sam Howell, Bailey Zappe, even Matt Corral, but just not a very strong quarterback draft. Well, next year is expected to be the exact opposite. Mel Kiper and Todd McShay have set the over and under for quarterbacks in the first round at 6.5, which I think it's safe to say there'll be more quarterbacks taken in the first round next year. But I looked at the list of like the top 10 NFL quarterback prospects for 2023. And not that I'm like the ultimate quarterback guru, but like I would take the under right now. So we'll get into that. Also, I found it fascinating, maybe you guys will as well, to see the increased prices of Airbnb in the city of Louisville this week. I mean, it's not a surprise. Things are a lot more expensive during Derby Week, but just how much more expensive even surprised me. So we'll get into that. We also know who's calling riders up at the Derby on Saturday. We can certainly talk about that. And whatever else you guys want to bring to the table. Questions, complaints, compliments, insults, whatever you've got, feel free to send them in. 502-653-0790. That is the number. Once again, I do want to remind you, we are fueled by Thornton's here in the Red Zone. And you need breakfast. I've always been told that it's the most important meal of the day. So it must be true. And they've got breakfast options. I'm on this diet that I've been on for, this is 3 weeks now, and I'm rolling. I don't know if anybody can tell. I fluctuate weight so much it's probably hard to tell, but I'm down 12 pounds in 3 weeks, and I'm like 2-3 pounds away from where I want to be in the summer, which is each time I try this program with Rev Body Sculpting, it's easier to get where I want to be. So if you are somebody looking to shed some winter weight, it's a no-brainer. Rev Body Sculpting is the way to go. Amy Stone can get you taken care of. Go check her out, and you will not regret it. You'll lose. It's awesome. So anyways, I can't have the breakfast sandwich that I'm craving every morning now. It's so good. It's delicious. But because I'm on the diet, I can't have it. So I want you guys to have it. It is the sausage, egg, and cheese croissant. It is so good, so delicious. The flaky croissant. The sausage is juicy. My mouth's watering just talking about it. So again, keep them in mind for breakfast this morning. They also have donuts, coffee, whatever you need to get your day started. Thornton's has got you covered, and we are proudly fueled by Thornton's. And once again, I mentioned this yesterday. Tomorrow, we'll be able to talk a little more about something really cool Thornton's has going on, but it doesn't start till tomorrow, so I have to keep quiet until then. But it's going to be awesome. So again, just be ready for that. All right, we'll take our first time out. Don't go anywhere. I'm Nick Coffey. He's Matt Allen. You are in the Red Zone, and we are fueled by Thornton's right here on 790 KRD.
You're in the Red Zone with Nick Coffey on 790 KRD. Fueled by Thornton's. Share your thoughts on the LNN Federal Credit Union tax line at 502-653-0790.
All right, so I'm a little distracted by this story coming out of Alabama. I've been reading every update on it. I don't know if you guys know about this, but if you haven't heard, you probably have heard about it. If you haven't, you will soon, because it's becoming one of the bigger stories in America. And it is this Alabama prison officer who has helped a murderer, a suspected killer, I should say. I guess he hasn't been. He's a suspected killer, but they've escaped together. I mean, she obviously didn't need to escape. She works at the jail. But apparently they're looking more into her situation. And apparently they believe this was just a great, well-executed plan where she'd convinced everybody like a year and a half ago she was going to retire. And she'd been talking about, you know, moving away, and everybody believed her. And little did they know that it was all this big – it was all a plot for her to get this murderer out of jail, and they can't find him, and they're on the run. This is absolutely going to be a movie, right, or a TV show. In fact, that reminds me, on Showtime – There is a really good, what do they call it? Like when they, miniseries, I guess, like they know it's not going to be extended, and it's based off a true story. It's called Escape at Dannemora. Really, really good. And it's about the same thing, about this woman who helped get these two different guys out of prison. So anyways, I'll move on. I know a lot of you don't care about that, but I find it fascinating. And yes, it is because of the prison element. All right, you are in the Red Zone, fueled by Thornton's here on 790 KRD. Nick Coffey with you, the marvelous Matt Allen alongside today. 502-653-0790 is the text line. Again, 502-653-0790. A loaded text line this morning. In fact, Matt, there's a request for you on the text line. Check that out when you get a chance. But I'll start with the first one that came in today. It says, you think Kenny and Nolan can really get Bates to come to Louisville? And if you are just now joining us, that is sort of what we led with today outside of the post positions for the Derby and the Oaks. But yes, Imani Bates. I think I say his name differently every time. Imani and Imoni. But Bates is a former, you know, phenom. And I guess, is he still a current phenom? Like he had a year at Memphis where he played up. He was basically a high school senior last year playing at Memphis, and he averaged double figures. So he has trimmed his list. Louisville is one of the schools that he is considering, and guys like Jeff Goodman think it's going to come down to Louisville and Oregon. So Louisville appears to be in good shape. Michigan, Arkansas, Seton Hall, DePaul, Louisville, and Eastern Michigan are the schools. And this is a guy that, again, 2 years ago was talked about as being one of the best players in America. And I don't really – there wasn't much high – so the 2020-21, I guess, would have been his junior season. I don't even know if they had high school basketball where he's from because a lot of places didn't. If you remember, it was such a mess of a year, and it was – you know, there really wasn't much of a high school season for those kids. So I'm not sure what happened in that year, but the next year where he would have been a high school senior, he decided to enter college early. And this is guy – he's been a Nike kid since day one, and he decided to go play for Penny Hardaway at Memphis. And in that he played in 18 games, 23.4 minutes per game, and he averaged 10 points a game. Well, 9.8, so right around 10. Averaged 3.5 rebounds. Didn't shoot it well. Shot at 38% from the floor, 32% from three-point line. And because the hype was what it was, I'd say the most consistent reaction about Amani Bates was that he was underwhelming. And I don't disagree with you on that. I mean, the guy had such an insane amount of hype that it was going to be hard for him to meet that expectation anyway. But he underwhelmed. But I don't think you can call him a bust yet. He might end up being a bust, but I'll admit, whenever, you know, I didn't watch Memphis play that much this year. In fact, the only times I did watch him, he was not playing because he was injured. He had a back injury. So just the overall reaction I heard about how big of a mess the situation was at Memphis and how this guy was so underwhelming, I assume like he barely played and barely scored any points. Little did I know, he actually averaged right around double figures. So I think it's another example of a guy that just had so much hype, and Memphis wasn't very good for the most part. And again, he struggled at times, and they played their best basketball when he wasn't around. But because of that, I think it made people over-exaggerate sort of his struggles. Now, again, this I'm sitting here telling you this morning, I didn't watch many Memphis games when he did play, but I don't think it's fair to say the kid's a bust, move on, you don't want him. No, you have four scholarships available, and if this kid does end up getting even close to the potential, reaching his potential, he could be one of the best players in the ACC. Now, do I expect that to happen? Nobody knows, right? But I think it seems as if whenever he first entered the portal and we heard Louisville reached out, there was at least a few that I saw that said, hey, you might want to stay away. This guy's got some baggage. Didn't work out at Memphis. He's got baggage. And I thought, I don't care. I think I trust Kenny Payne to handle whatever baggage it is. And you're in a position where you need players. You need talent. This is a guy that has that. Now, will he reach his potential? Who knows? Is he overrated? We'll see. But I don't think the question is even a question anymore. I think it's answered. Yes, you take him. And clearly Louisville is pursuing this guy. He is a 6'9" guard/forward. He plays a lot on the perimeter despite being 6'9". And it can't be overstated enough. He should have been a high school senior last year. There are a lot of guys that reclassify, and what they actually do is they end up reclassifying to their current, to the right grade, if that makes sense. Like, a lot of these guys who enroll early aren't really enrolling early. They're enrolling on time. They, as either a eighth grader or a freshman, they jumped back a grade to likely go on a postgraduate plan, that path. And then once they get towards the end of high school, they realize, you know what, I'm ready now. I'm going to go back to my original class. That is not the case with Amani Bates. He was a 17-year-old high school senior last year playing college basketball at Memphis. So it sounds like NIL is a big factor. I'm not sure what NIL U of L is. I mean, again, Kenny Payne can't offer an NIL deal because that's not allowed. But obviously, Kenny Payne can tell this young man, hey, there's NIL help here, but I can't be involved. I guess that's the pitch. I'm not really sure what you are and aren't allowed to do. But then again, I don't think anybody's following any rules specifically right now because the NCAA is going to have a tough time enforcing anything. But the connection here with Bates, and this came up a couple of weeks ago, when Kenny Payne hired, and I guess I keep saying he's hired. They haven't announced it just yet. I can't imagine that it's fallen through and it won't happen. But it has not been made official. But Kenny Payne's director of basketball operations, as you know, he's the son of Roc Nation CEO. Justin Perez is his name, and his parents run Roc Nation. In fact, his mother is the CEO of Roc Nation. All right? Amani Bates is signed to Roc Nation. So there is already a connection there. Maybe Roc Nation has some kind of an NIL deal coming through them to where they get it to this kid, and that's how he ends up at Louisville. But They're, you know, if you're wondering how Louisville, and again, I don't think it's a huge surprise Louisville is in the mix here, but where Louisville may have a leg up compared to others is that, again, Roc Nation, like a lot of agencies, they now represent college athletes throughout the NIL process. And Amani Bates is signed to Roc Nation. He's one of very, in fact, I think he's one of very few of their college athletes that they have signed. And the CEO of that company's son now works for Kenny Payne. I guess that's not official, but that's the plan. So, you know, fingers crossed. I really thought when his name first hit the portal and Louisville was involved, it did seem as if it was going to be a not a controversial thing to talk about. But I wouldn't have been surprised if some Louisville fans said, no, the guy's – because a lot of the struggles Memphis had this year was blamed on him. Because, again, they got better whenever he left the team briefly. But to me, I trust Kenny Payne to be able to handle that. If there's one thing we've learned about Kenny Payne, it's what? Relationships, right? Well, I think he can establish a good relationship with this kid. And again, you need if you didn't need players and it would, you know, overcrowd you at a certain spot, it'd be a different conversation. That's not the case. You still have four scholarships available, and the likelihood of you landing multiple of these guys, I'd say, is pretty unlikely. Just because maybe these guys would want to play together, but what I'm getting at is right now Louisville is in the mix and appears to be in solid shape for guys like Tyrese Hunter, the Iowa State transfer, although he was at Tennessee over the weekend for a visit. So I say they're in solid shape because they're a finalist, but again, really tough competition for the Iowa State point guard. But Tyrese Hunter, Amani Bates, who again, they're now one of six finalists for, and then the other is Missouri State transfer Isaiah Mosley, who, again, he's got a lot of Duke, Kansas, Texas, Oklahoma, Texas Tech. I mean, he's got options everywhere. In fact, Isaiah Mosley, the Missouri State transfer, is probably the best scorer in the portal. And all three of those guys I just mentioned, Mosley, Missouri State, Hunter at Iowa State, Amani Bates, the Memphis transfer, Louisville appears to be in solid shape with all of them. They may not get any of them, but they're at least in the running, which makes me happy. But it does make me worry a little bit that if they were to miss on all three of these guys, I just think there's a big gap between those three and then everybody else. At least that's the way especially at the guard spot. And that's what you need. You need guards. You have your front court is squared away. All right. Let's see here. 502-653-0790. That is the text line. This text says, do you think Malik will be drafted next year? I've never really heard anyone talk about his NFL potential. I mean, he's got a chance to be drafted. I think, obviously, he's got to be a little more consistent in all areas. But if he has the year that he had last year, which pretty good. I mean, his numbers were really impressive. Had Louisville been a better team, he probably would have gotten a lot more national buzz. So that's a factor. Louisville's going to have to be pretty good for him to get that kind of buzz. But yeah, if he puts up the same numbers that he did last year, or at least similar, and Louisville is somewhat successful, he'll be talked about when it comes. He'll be an intriguing NFL prospect. But yeah, now that you say that, I haven't heard many people talk about his NFL upside. He certainly has some, but as far as where he'll be drafted, I think it depends on just how much more consistent he becomes in 2023. And by the way, we'll talk about that coming up here on the other side, because we now have the updated mock draft for next year's NFL draft. We're a year away from it, but in a year where in 2022 the quarterback crop was really, really bad, at least compared to other drafts, next year is supposed to be loaded. In fact, I mentioned this a moment ago, but Mel Kiper and Todd McShay have set the over and under at 6.5 quarterbacks taken in the first round next year. I would take the under because, like a lot of these guys, they'll have the hype, the buzz. I mean, Sam Howell and Matt Corral were believed to be probably top 10 picks a year ago. They both went in the later rounds, especially Howell in this year's draft. So it's, you never know. In fact, Will Levis believed to be a top first round quarterback pick next year, which I won't claim to be a quarterback guru, but I just, he's solid. But the thought of him being like a top 10 pick just doesn't seem realistic. But again, maybe I'm just a hater. Maybe I'm jealous because, you know, as we discussed yesterday, Kentucky's turning out pros at a pretty high rate right now.
You're in the Red Zone with Nick Coffey on 790 KRD. Fueled by Thorntons. Share your thoughts on the LNN Federal Credit Union text line at 502-653-0790.
That's right. You are in the Red Zone here on 790 KRD. Take us with you wherever you go with the iHeartRadio app. You can also listen live at 790KRD.com. All right. We'll save the NFL draft stuff for the other side because I do want to let you guys hear one of our Derby profiles. This one, since we knew of all the competitors in this year's Kentucky Derby, this one is – and I can't tell you that it's a great name because I feel like it's kind of a weak Derby when it comes to names of horses, but maybe that's just me. But Tis the Bomb. That's the one I like, and here is our Derby profile of Tis the Bomb, courtesy of Mr. Jody Demling.
Now, a look at the Kentucky Derby field, one by one. Tis the Bomb.
Tis the Bomb, the Jeff Ruby Stakes winner, second in the Battaglia Memorial at Turfway Park. Tis the Bomb has actually won at four Kentucky tracks during his career. Trainer Kenny McPeak is hoping he can make it five in the Kentucky Derby. Tis the Bomb is a bay son of Hit It a Bomb. Tis the Bomb opened his career with a seventh place finish just a couple weeks after the Kentucky Derby last May. Then it was a 14-length score to break his maiden at Ellis Park in early July. A win at Kentucky Downs, a win at Keeneland, both of those on the turf. Trainer Kenny McPeak then sent him to Del Mar. He was second in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf in early November. It was then to the Kentucky Derby Trail with a three-row debut in the Holy Bull at Gulfstream. Tis the Bomb finished seventh, beaten by 20 lengths, before going to Turfway Park to win the John Battaglia Memorial and the Jeff Ruby Stakes on the synthetic surface. Owned by Magdalena Racing, trained by Kenny McPeak, who is 0-for-6 in the Derby, a second-place finish in 1995 with Tejano Run. Jockey Brian Hernandez will be in the irons. Hernandez is 0-for-2 in the Derby. He finished second with McCracken in 2017. McPeak is hoping Tis the Bomb goes by them all and wins the Kentucky Derby.
We're going to allow him to run early and maybe keep a little adversity out of his way. I mean, he's got enough speed to go out. He broke his maiden in 23:47. He's got that kind of speed if you need it. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna let him run early. And you know, this horse got a serious chance too. I mean, he's leading earner in the race. I think he's made over $1 million, and he's really only got one bad race on his page. Yeah. And people are tossing it. Might be a mistake.
So Tis the Bomb has 30-1 odds as of yesterday morning. I'm not sure if that's been updated, but post position number 9. That's the. Usually, this is what I do every year, and I said for years I'd never win, and you couldn't be worse if you tried as far as betting on horses. But I have had a little bit better luck in the last couple of years, where I'll take not an extreme long shot, but certainly not a favor. Then I'll just put it across the board, and I think that's what I'm going to do with Tis the Bomb again. 30-1 odds, it is one of the bigger long shots. In fact, yeah, the. 30-1 is the worst odds that I'm looking at as of right now, and there are about 5 to 6 horses. So I guess it is considered a long shot. But at post position number 9, I'm just going to throw it across the board, and it's one of those that if it does hit, it'll probably pay pretty decent because the odds aren't great. And then always I try to pick two horses and do an exacta box. Not sure which one of those. I'm not going to do the favorites, though, because, I mean, even if that is what plays out, there's not a whole lot of action there. If you know what I mean. So anyways, we'll have another Derby profile for you guys coming up here shortly. We'll do Zandon, which of course is the morning line favorite in this year's Derby. And Zandon drew post position. Let's see here. Well, what? Yeah, Zandon drew post position number 10. And current odds are 3-1. All right, before we take a top of the hour break here, some news that is worth sharing that is very scary, but a JCPS school bus has overturned with children in it this morning. This is according to WDRB News. Our own Will Clark of WHAS is working on the story as well, but It says between I-264 and Cannons Lane. They're gathering more information right now, but it is bus number 2015 that was involved in a crash per the principal at Manual High School. So, again, that's a very scary situation. We'll get as much details as we can here. Looks like it looks like copter footage almost of the scene there. I guess maybe it's just the cameras they have that show you the interstates. But yeah, a bus is overturned with kids on it this morning, and that's very scary. So when we have an update on that, I'll be sure to let you know. I'm sure it'll be all the news stations are talking about. So that's very scary. All right, we got two more hours to go and a lot to get into, so don't go anywhere. I want to revisit the Imani Bates conversation. We'll also talk about Malik Cunningham. I thought it was an interesting question that just came up a moment ago, and that is, what is his NFL draft stock? And I don't know if he has much right now, but I mean, keep in mind, he did put up some numbers last year that probably would have gotten him a lot more attention had Louisville been in a better spot. Now, I don't think he's on any mock drafts at this point, but there are believed to be this again. It's probably just what they do to get attention, and mock drafts are always, you know, they're silly, but I'm somebody that always spends way too much time looking at them and reading them. But McShay and Kiper, they think that they'll potentially be a record for quarterbacks taken in the first round of next year's draft. We'll talk about some of those names and a lot more. Don't go anywhere. You are in the Red Zone. We're fueled by Thorns right here on 790 KRD.
You're in the Red Zone with Nick Coffey on 790 KRD, fueled by Thorntons.
I try to be pretty productive during the commercial breaks. That way I can, you know, keep this thing rolling and be ready to get right back at it when we come back from commercial break. But I've been arguing with my wife this morning. And Matt, you know where I stand. I think I told you I'm not a huge fan of the dog we got. We got a dog not that long ago, and it's been more of a hassle than anything else.
Thought you were going to turn him into a social media star.
No. If he could turn me make me some money, then maybe he'd be more on my good side than the bad side that he's on now. But he's just a lot of work. We got him as a puppy, so we've had to do the whole potty training thing. And he doesn't chill out. He's a lot of work. And the only thing he's got going for him is that my son will be two next month, and he loves the dog. But like, if the dog just ran away, I wouldn't lose sleep. That's kind of where I'm at with it. And my wife kind of agrees, but of course she's a little softer than I am. So I may have found a way to get rid of this dog, Matt. We got a new fence put in our backyard yesterday, and it was a great investment for our home. It's going to look a lot better. We had an old privacy fence that was falling over. It was crappy. It had been there since I think the house was built many years ago. But we put in, I don't know how to describe it. It's got the black rails. Anyways, the dog can get through the fence. So we never once even thought about that until yesterday, as our guy Donnie, who came out and did a great job on the fence, he got it all situated, and we're just looking and realized, you know what? There's a big enough gap there to where this little dog we have can probably get through. And sure enough, he runs outside once the fence is complete and runs right through. He's running around the neighborhood, and luckily he came back. We didn't go chasing him. But like, how are we going to – I mean, if we got a – the fence was a much bigger investment than the dog. I mean, I'm not going to go drop the dog off and abandon it by any means. But like, if you're interested in the dog, maybe just, keep me in mind. Like, maybe we can work something out. I mean, I don't think I'd actually be able to go through with it because, my wife would kill me. But I'm also not going to be chasing this.
So you're saying you prefer life?
What do you mean?
Well, you said your wife would kill you if you went through it. So you choose to live.
Yeah, I choose to live.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm at home a lot more during the day than she is. So, like, if I got to take him out every time and I've got to hold him. And I guess, this is going to sound. I'm going to come off looking bad and sounding bad when I say this, because look, this is part of having a dog. There are a lot of people who have a dog that when they take it out to go to the restroom, they have to hold it on a leash. Well, like, I didn't sign up for that. I didn't want this, and now I'm the one that's got to do it because I'm home with him a lot. That's the worst part about it. The dog's really not that bad, but I tend to be the one around him the most, and I'm the one who has. You know, I just when I'm on a call or something at home and he's yapping. Or now, when I take him out, I've got to go and make sure he goes number one and number two, because if I leave him out there and without on a leash, he's going to run through the gate. So that's how, I mean, again, we made a, you know, getting a new fence is not exactly cheap, but it was a good investment. But we never once considered, oh, yeah, what are we going to do with our dog? Because the hope is that when it's nicer outside, like this time of year, we can just leave him outside and he'll run around and do whatever. But now we can't do that. So she's telling me she's ordered something she can put around the collar. And I think it's called a puppy bumper. And it basically, you put it around the collar to where he wouldn't be able to sneak through. But this dumb dog he's pretty sharp. I think he'll manage to get this thing off of his neck and he'll probably still sneak, you know, probably get out and it'll be a mess. But anyways, I never wanted a dog. I think I talked about this on the show, and we'll move on. I promise. I know you guys don't really care. But my wife, I thought she was maybe having like a midlife crisis or something. She, within like a 2-week period, she just took off work and drove 2 hours and brought a dog home without even really telling me. I mean, she told me she was going to do it, and we didn't talk about it though. Like, I didn't sign up to have a dog. And then like 2 weeks later, she went and bought a new car. Luckily, her, you know, out of nowhere purchases that were surprising, that is stopped. But yeah, we had a new car and a new dog out of nowhere, and I didn't ask for either of them. Anyways, we'll move on. All right, so it is hour number two. You are in the red zone, and we are fueled by Thornton's. Thank you so much for hanging out with us here on a rainy, gross morning. It does sound like it stopped raining as of right now, but it's been a gross morning throughout, which is why we are in studio today. I was going to be out at the church at the track backside at Churchill Downs, but we called an audible with the journey that it is to get there and where I have to park and carrying the equipment. It didn't make any sense. So we are warm, we are dry, and not out there in that slop. And maybe we'll try again tomorrow. I mean, I do appreciate Darren Rogers and those guys for getting us set up, but I think they understand there's a reason we didn't show up this morning. But if it's nicer tomorrow, then we'll head that way. All right, so an update on this really scary situation in Louisville this morning. A school bus with students in it overturned earlier this morning. This is the latest. 5 to 6 kids on that bus have been taken to the hospital. The injuries vary. It is JCPS bus 2015. It overturned. There were 22 kids on the bus at the time, and it looks like it was taking kids to Manual High School and No Middle School. And it says here that there is the kids that were on the bus that have not been taken to the hospital are currently at Wagner High School. That is where families can come and get their children. Very scary. Again, when we have more information, we'll be sure to share with you. But yes, a very, very, I mean, I can't imagine being a, I cannot imagine being a student on that bus and that happening. That's awful. And then imagine being a parent and knowing your kid is on that bus. So again, prayers to everybody involved. And if we have an update on the situation, I will be sure to let you guys know. All right, so here's your quick little Derby fix this morning, because that's why you tune in. It's a horse racing show, right? Post positions were drawn yesterday, and I don't think that led to a whole lot of changing in regards to the horses you're hearing the most about. You've got Zandon, the 3-1 morning line favorite. It drew post position number 10. That is trained by Chad Brown. And I mentioned this at the beginning of the show. Apparently Churchill Downs, I wish I could credit who this person was. I didn't catch their name, but they were on this morning with Tony Cruz on 840 WHAS. And they were just mentioning that the two horses that are getting talked about more than anything, of course, are Zandon, the favorite. And then the other is Louisiana Derby winner Epicenter, trained by Steve Asmussen, who is the second choice morning line odds at 7-2. It drew post position number 3. But of those two, the ones that are getting talked about more than anything, it is Zandon that's actually generating more buzz online. Now, make of that what you will. That may not mean a whole lot of anything, but it seemed as if a few weeks ago it was going to be Epicenter that ended up being the buzz horse that everybody talked about. And now I think there are two. In fact, Epicenter appears to be, again, right now it's not the favorite. For the Oaks, it is Nest that is the 5-2 morning line favorite. And I wanted to make sure I got the trainer correct. Todd Pletcher is the trainer of Nest, and then Kathleen O is the second choice at 7-2. That horse is trained by Shug McGahee. I think I'm saying that correct, who actually won the Oaks back in 1993. So there you go. A little horse racing analysis for you guys. In fact, that's not analysis. I'm literally reading it from the internet. It's someone else's analysis, I suppose. Anyways, let's get back into this conversation about Amani Bates. He is the Memphis transfer who has trimmed his list to six schools, and Louisville is one of them. And I can't think of a former player that had a similar story that Bates has, because it's a guy that for a while, I mean, he was the number one player in this 2022 class that is high school seniors that are entering college this year, and he enrolled early. So had he stayed in his class, I wonder what the buzz would be, but also would Louisville even be in the mix here? Because he decided to enroll early, was the national player of the year as a sophomore in high school basketball. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He's from Ypsilanti, Michigan. By the way, a little random fact about Amani Bates, his father actually played at Kentucky Wesleyan many years ago. But Bates, for a long time, has been believed to be the next great NBA prospect. And then as a junior, I don't think he had much of a season due to the pandemic. And then as a senior, he decided to skip his senior year and enroll early at Memphis. And in that year, I think it's very important to point out, yes, he was underwhelming, but I don't think it's fair to say he was a bust. This is a kid who was 17 years old playing at Memphis against a really competitive schedule. Memphis played some of the best teams in the country out of conference, and he averaged double figures. I mean, right at double figures, 9.8. So I'll admit, when I went back and looked at his numbers, I was pleasantly surprised that he actually produced more so than I expected, because the noise around Amani Bates all year at Memphis was, wow, this kid has not translated. And he's one of the many reasons why Memphis is struggling. And there's no way around it. No way to sugarcoat it. They got better when he stopped playing. I don't know if that's because of scheme or what. But, you know, Penny Hardaway, Larry Brown, that staff at Memphis, they just didn't get the most out of him. And when he left the team, they played better. He also did come back later on in the year, and he was on the floor for this Memphis team whenever they lost to Gonzaga in the NCAA tournament. He played 12 minutes in that game, a close loss for Memphis, by the way. But his updated list of schools right now are Michigan, Arkansas, Seton Hall, DePaul, Louisville, and Eastern Michigan. Jeff Goodman, College Basketball Insider, says he thinks it's going to come down to Louisville and Oregon. And Louisville, of course, an Adidas school, but I think this is a Nike thing here. DePaul's head coach is Tony Stubblefield, who worked at Oregon for 11, 12 years before taking the job at DePaul. He still has very much connections with Nike. He's a Nike guy. You work at Oregon for a while, you're a Nike guy. You're a part of the Nike family. Well, as you know, Kenny Payne, same situation. He's been a Nike guy for really his whole coaching life, and now he's in an Adidas school. And the other obvious connection here for Bates and Louisville is that Justin Perez is going to be hired as the, I don't know if it's officially happened yet, it hasn't been announced, but he's going to be Louisville's director of basketball operations. Justin Perez is the son of Roc Nation CEO. Roc Nation represents Amani Bates right now. That is his agent, his agency, I should say. So there's the connection there. And we're probably getting ahead of ourselves here, because who knows, maybe Louisville doesn't end up getting Bates. But if they do, I think this will be the first sign that Louisville is in fact in a really, really unique spot where they are an Adidas school. As we discussed last week, they make more money than any university when it comes to their apparel deal. But they also have two coaches on the staff, their head coach being one in Kenny Payne, and also Josh Jamison, who was hired last week. There's no denying the Nike relationship there. They are a part of the Nike family. So Bates has been a Nike kid his whole life. And if he chooses to go to an Adidas school with Kenny Payne and Josh Jamison, maybe I'm connecting dots before I should, but that would tell me, yeah, you may in fact have, you're going to be in this unique spot where Adidas, of course, is on your side because they pay you a ton of money. They want the top Adidas players to come to a place like Louisville because they want to keep it within the Adidas family. But also, Nike really has no incentive to push Nike kids your way, but maybe they're not going to stop you because, in fact, it is like a family relationship. So I don't think it's a question. I think it's a no-brainer. Yes, you take this kid if you can, because he's super talented. And if he even comes close to sniffing his potential in his one, maybe two seasons at Louisville, he's going to help you. By the way, let's play this sound again. This is when Kenny Payne was hired. This is him discussing the Nike Adidas situation because, as he said, best of both worlds. That's the goal. And I think if you were to land Bates, that would be the first sign that, you know what? He's right. The Nike relationship, the family-like relationship is paying off. And you also, of course, are the top Adidas school.
Journal. How you doing? You mentioned Phil Knight, and there's a 6 more years, I think, on the Adidas contract here. Is that an issue in your mind, and do your recruiting connections transfer to another shoe company?
Kenny Klein prepped me for that question right there. My bad, Kenny. I didn't mean to throw you under the bus, buddy. But we were prepared for you. And I'm going to tell you just what I told Kenny Klein last night that nobody knows. In 1989, Adidas endorsed 6 basketball players for their shoes. I was one of the 6. So I have an affiliation with Adidas. I was one of the first professional athletes in basketball that they endorsed. So I have an affiliation with Adidas. My relationship with Nike, to be clear, so everybody understands this, it's not a working relationship. They are my family. The head guy that runs that organization is like my uncle. He's a family member, just like these guys. He loves me, and I love him. The guys that run that organization, they are part of my family. They spend time together. So what I'm saying to you is that we have the both of best worlds, if that makes sense.
So that's just something to keep an eye on. Now, Bates isn't the only transfer Louisville is pursuing. There's Tyrese Hunter, which it doesn't seem like there's really been a whole lot of information out there, at least that I've seen, as far as which way he's leaning. It sounds like he's gonna take some visits. Louisville hopefully will get a visit. He did visit Tennessee recently. Louisville was in to see him last week, I think on Thursday. So they're in the running, but some really, really tough competition because it's Tennessee, Texas, Purdue, Kansas, Gonzaga, all going after a guy who is without question the best point guard available in the portal. All right. Speaking of the portal, let's talk about this this college football situation. So Pittsburgh All-American receiver Jordan Addison, he is the reigning Blitkenoff Award winner, going to the best receiver in the country. He was phenomenal last year. Kenny Pickett, a lot of those touchdowns Kenny Pickett threw that got himself into the first round were to Addison. Well, they've lost Pickett. They've lost their offensive coordinator. And I think they've also lost their quarterback's coach as well, or maybe it's the offensive line. But either way, Addison's coming back to college, but Pittsburgh not nearly believed to be as good as they were a year ago. And that has led to speculation that he may transfer, but he's not in the portal just yet. And that's where we are now. The same thing happened with Louisville receiver Tyler Harrell. Right after Louisville finished up their spring ball, I don't know how it got out, but it got out that Alabama was not directly, but through back channel communication, they were letting people who know Tyler Harrell know, hey, if you want to enter the portal, we'd love to have you, and we've got an NIL package for you if you're interested. Well, what did Tyler Harrell do? He took that information, sat on it for a week or so, and entered the portal, visited one school, Alabama. Committed where? Alabama. So, I mean, that's technically tampering, but I think you can skirt the rules a little bit, and they did that. So this is now playing out with a player that's on a bigger level than, I mean, Tyler Harrell was a fine player last year for Louisville, but obviously Louisville losing a receiver to Alabama is not like it's not exactly a big story in college football. It makes sense. Kid enters the portal. Alabama's interested. It's a no-brainer. I mean, Harrell last year, again, he caught 18 passes, and 6 times he caught passes, they ended up in the end zone. So it wasn't as if he was this. Look, when he enters the portal, there's not as much buzz about him as there would be Addison, who, again, right now is still not in the portal just yet. But his head coach, Pat Narduzzi, and I love this, by the way. I just think it adds to the drama, and it's entertaining. But he got wind on Friday night, because that's when the rumors started to fly that this kid isn't in the portal yet, but he's about to enter the portal, and it's USC that has let him know, hey, you want to come to – you want to, you're, if you're looking to get out, we'd love to have you. And, oh, by the way, we've got a phenomenal arrangement for you if you want to make the trip to Southern California. Well, Pat Narduzzi found out about it. And I'll be honest with you, if I was a player, I would tell my coach this stuff. Like, I wouldn't be secretive to my coach. So Pat Narduzzi, what did he do? He called Lincoln Riley. I don't know if they have a relationship through networking or what it is, but he flat out just got angry and called Lincoln Riley and said, hey, like, you know, what are you doing? Like, this is my player. He's not in the portal. This is not allowed. And I don't know what Lincoln Riley ended up saying, but the kid still isn't in the portal. But check this out. Here is the deal. He is rumored to be receiving $3 million in NIL money to go to USC, plus a house in SoCal. And this is from USC boosters that are funding this NIL venture, not just for him, but for other players. Like, rich people who love their school and their program, they're putting their money where their mouth is, and they're buying players. This is where we are right now with college athletics. And it makes a lot of people uncomfortable, and I suppose I get it. This is just so different than what we're used to. These guys weren't even allowed to have jobs a year ago. Now they're making – I mean – this is just insane. If, in fact, that is true, if Addison enters the portal, ends up at USC, and ends up making what is rumored to be $3 million, he'll make more money than second-round picks in the draft this past year. In fact, this is from a Pittsburgh reporter. It says, if true, he'll make more than Steelers' second-round wide receiver pick and have a 2022 compensation package that's on par with Kenny Pickett, who just got picked overall – just got picked in the first round at 20th overall. So if he ends up in the portal, I think we know where he's going. But I'm curious. This is another angle of it. Does Pittsburgh now get involved? Now, do they have a booster with $3 million to give up? I don't know. That's a lot of money. But you're going to see this is happening. This is something, you know, back to basketball here. Tyrese Hunter, the word from Iowa State is that they think they've got an NIL deal that will have Tyrese Hunter remove his name from the portal and stay in Ames. So these guys may do this without the intention of leaving. They just want to see what the bids are going to be. And as I've said millions of times, yes, the schools with the bigger resources, the rich are going to get richer. And you'll say, well, this is not fair. They've got more rich donors, so they're going to get better players. This is not fair. This is going to ruin college sports. Like, I hear you, but what you have to understand is the rich are already getting richer. Like, those schools that now, it's just an added advantage to what is already a long list of advantages they have over you. Alabama has a lot of advantages over Louisville in football. Now they just have more money to throw at players. Iowa State losing Tyrese Hunter in basketball. No surprise, it's Iowa State. So, I just like the thought of coaches calling each other out. Drama's good, drama sells, and if you've got... You know, it's one thing to be indirect and claim that everybody's cheating, everybody's doing this and that. How about you just call them out by name? I love it. All right, quick timeout. Don't go anywhere. We're way too late for a break. I apologize. You are in the Red Zone. We're fueled by Thorntons here on 790 KRD.
You're in the Red Zone with Nick Coffey on 790 KRD, fueled by Thorntons. Share your thoughts on the LNN Federal Credit Union text line at 502-653-0790.
All right, so we have some good news in regards to the school bus crash earlier that where a bus with, I think it was 22 kids on it, overturned on the interstate. There were 5 to 6 kids taken to the hospital, but... Again, the latest here is that those injuries were not life-threatening. So it sounds like, I guess it could not be life-threatening and still be somewhat of a serious injury. But that is the latest. That's a very – I'm now seeing pictures, and there's a video that has surfaced here on Twitter that shows the school bus, sure enough, overturned. It's that's scary stuff. All right, you are in the Red Zone. We are fueled by Thorntons here on 790 KRD. My name is Nick Coffey, the marvelous Matt Allen, alongside today. All right, So I just did a quick little Google search here. Malik, because we had somebody earlier, and I haven't even given this much thought, but Malik Cunningham, of course, he's in his, 13th year at Louisville, it seems. So he was draft eligible this year, but didn't get a whole lot of draft buzz. And, of course, an NIL deal brought him back. But just from what I can gather here, he doesn't have a whole lot. There's, when it comes to mock drafts out there, he's not exactly featured in many of them. But this is believed to be a really strong quarterback class coming up here in 2023, which we'll get to that in just a second. But back to Malik. I mean, given 10 years ago, before Lamar, before Kyler Murray, before even Baker Mayfield, who's short, you had to fit a specific profile to really generate NFL draft buzz. Well, now that's changed. I mean, there's guys that are believed to be top 10 picks next year that don't fit what used to be that mold of a big, humongous quarterback with a strong arm that doesn't move very much, that's not very mobile, like a Ben Roethlisberger type. So guys like Malik are now getting opportunities in the NFL, whereas they weren't 10 years ago. So that I think that bodes well for him. Now, for him to actually be an NFL quarterback long term, I think he needs to just improve his consistency and just polish up some things. I mean, he's gotten a lot better. Scott Satterfield, you guys know where I stand on Scott Satterfield. I don't think he's given you fireable results just yet, but I feel fine in telling you that I'm underwhelmed. It's back-to-back losing seasons, and that's why year four is such a big year. But I will give him a lot of credit with Malik Cunningham. Malik Cunningham has gotten a lot better, and I think, for the most part, I think at times they ran him a little too much on the goal line last year, but I feel like Scott Satterfield and Malik Cunningham, Satterfield's play calling is a really good, it just works well with Malik, especially going back to his first season when he really emerged and became, you know, there was no debate about who's going to be the starter. Is it Juwan Pass or is it Malik Cunningham? It was Malik Cunningham. He really finished the season very, very strong in 2019, and that's where he really made a name for himself. 2020 was a down year, took a step back, turned the ball over way too much. And then last year, he had some good games, bad games, but overall he was pretty good. I mean, his numbers, especially some of those games against the likes of Syracuse and Duke, I mean, most of his really good games did come against subpar competition, but still, he had a good year. And he's going to be talked about probably not as the best quarterback in the ACC, but that is one thing I will defend the ACC. They're going to have a good group of quarterbacks this year in the Atlantic Coast Conference, and Malik's one of those guys. So with the right system in the NFL, I think he could play in the NFL. Now, will he get drafted? I don't know. But I think, obviously, it comes down to just how good he is this year. Is he more consistent? And Louisville's going to have to be good for him to generate some buzz. There's no doubt about it. In fact, at the end of last year, right before the Kentucky game, Louisville had blown out Cuse and Duke. And then he started that Thursday night performance against Duke where he put up insane numbers, broke some Lamar Jackson records. I mean, he led PTI, if you remember. He led SportsCenter that night because, of course, SportsCenter was on after the game. But PTI talked about him. Like, he started to actually get an insane amount of buzz, and it was deserving. Well, then, of course, you know, you get to the Kentucky game, and yikes, you get blown out. So it kind of derailed the buzz. So Louisville will have to be good enough. Louisville will have to be better than average, right? They can't be a 6-6, 7-5 type team for him to really get a lot of notoriety because, again, look at last year. He did it last year. He put up insane numbers, but the team just was kind of, you know, they were mediocre. Anyways, the reason I bring up the NFL quarterbacks is or the NFL draft is because this quarterback crop, Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, they've set the over and over under at 6.5 for quarterbacks being taken in the first round, which to me seems, I mean, I would, if I could get that action right now, I would take the under. I just can't imagine there'll be 7 quarterbacks taken in the first round. But there's a lot of teams like my Colts that decided not to pursue a quarterback because this class was so weak, the one we just had in 2022. Well, here are the top quarterback prospects in the draft for next year, and they play for schools you'd expect. You've got C.J. Stroud at Ohio State at number 1. I'm reading here the power rankings from Sporting News. And C.J. Stroud, I think, is as good as advertised. Bryce Young in Alabama, clearly this, and I don't know if I'll ever not think of this when I think of Bryce Young. When he won the Heisman, and it was his Heisman speech where he gave the old cliche, "Nobody believed in me, nobody gave me a chance," and it genuinely made me angry because, like, it's one of the dumbest things an athlete's ever said. Look, it's just a kid. We all got to manufacture motivation. I get it, but literally, Everybody picked him to do it. He's been ranked as the number one quarterback prospect in his class coming out of high school for like 3 years. So, in fact, no. Everybody, like, what you did, still very impressive. You deserve a lot of credit for it. But you actually did what everybody expected. Like, it's not as if you were – it was nobody doubting you. In fact, you had all the – you had all the buzz and expectation to do exactly what you did. Number three is Spencer Rattler. That surprises me a little bit. I mean, this is a guy that a year ago was thought – I mean, actually, he was pretty underwhelming in both seasons that he started at Oklahoma. Now, he did have some big shoes to fill, taking over for Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield. That's a tough act to follow. But he was not very good at Oklahoma, lost his job, got beat out. And now he's at South Carolina. We'll see. I've watched Rattler enough to just simply tell you he's not very good. You could do a lot worse than him, but I don't see the NFL upside. But he's believed to be a first-round pick. Phil Jurkovec of Boston College, he's listed at number four here. He's a really good quarterback that didn't play a ton. He only played, I think, six games last year because of a wrist injury. He's a Notre Dame transfer. Had he stayed healthy, he might have been drafted this past year. He might have entered the draft. So all I do know is that the quarterback they replaced him with last year was lousy. So Jurkovec is a guy that is still projected to be a first-round pick. You've got Hendon Hooker at Tennessee, who I feel like has been in college for 13 years. Grayson McCall at Coastal Carolina. Let's see, Anthony Richardson of Florida, who really came on late last year. And then Will Levis, Kentucky quarterback, is listed as a first-round draft pick. In fact, I think, let me see here, I think, let me just double check this. I think the ESPN's most latest mock draft, I think he has, let's see here. Yeah, of course, it's behind a paywall, so I can't see it. But he has, yeah, Kiper and McShay both have Will Levis as a top, yeah, one of them's got him in the top 10 of the draft, which is insane to think about. But I'll say this. We'll see what Will Levis looks like out there this year without Wandell Robinson and without Liam Cohen calling the plays. But overall, I do think he's pretty good. I don't know if he's like next level NFL, but he's got a strong arm. And part of me says if these guys think he's that good, I mean, I'll take their word for it. But I think at times last year, he looked so good to me because it had been so, and this is not a backhanded compliment, this is the truth. It had been so long since we saw Kentucky have a good quarterback. He is by far the best quarterback Mark Stoops has had. I think he's better than Andre Woodson. Like, he's probably the best Kentucky quarterback since who? Jared Lorenzen? And again, as much as Will Levis is a good quarterback, and again, he's being mentioned as a first-round pick next year, I think that also just speaks to how bad Kentucky quarterbacks have been. I mean, Mark Stoops has been able to get their program not only turned around, but they're now in a place where they've never been, where they are consistently winning enough games to go to a bowl. They're putting guys in the league. They've won 10 games on two separate occasions in the last 4 years. Like, they're in a really good spot for their standard. Now, I think at times they get a little ahead of themselves and think they're about to go win the SEC, which I don't think they're close to that just yet. But give credit where it's due. Stoops has done a really good job of reshaping what Kentucky football is. But he really did that without a quarterback until now. Now he has one. And I said all year, I think Kentucky's pretty good, but I wanted to see what they did against Louisville because, you know, they did beat Florida and LSU, and both those teams were historically bad for their standard. I don't think they ended up beating a team with a winning record. And that doesn't prove that they weren't good. That's why I said, you know, we'll see. And sure enough, what did they do? They came into Cardinal Stadium and they embarrassed Louisville. So they were good. And Will Levis is good. But I think what changed for them is Stoops has always had a solid defense. He's always had a good line on both sides of the ball, good running backs. They always played conservative. And I remember last year, a guy I was talking to that had crossed paths with Liam Cohen before told me, if Mark Stoops finally hands over the keys and lets an offensive coordinator come in and do his job and he doesn't get involved, then Kentucky could be really good because Levis has the arm. Liam Cohen, again, is a really bright. I mean, there's a reason he's now calling the plays. Or he's now the offensive coordinator with the Rams. But you also had Wandell Robinson, which is, he was a second-round draft pick. So I hate to say it, but they were good last year, and I hope they're not as good this year. But if Will Levis is as good as these NFL draft experts think, then we're likely in for another, you know, Louisville fans like myself are likely in for another year where we just have to sit back and deal with it, where they're pretty damn good. And Louisville, we'll see. In fact, speaking of that, somebody asked me on the text line if I saw the Matt Fortuna write-up about Louisville football. I did. We'll talk about it. And Matt Fortuna is not a Louisville fan or a Louisville blogger or writer or anything like that. This is a guy who works for The Athletic, and he put together a really, really optimistic piece about Louisville football in 2022. So I'm not going to read the thing to you on the air, but just some of the takeaways in regards to, I mean, he thinks Louisville doesn't really have a weakness on their team, which I don't agree with that necessarily, but again, that's an outsider's opinion on Louisville, which again, it made me feel a little, and it is a reminder for me that if they just weren't so vulnerable on defense, my goodness, they could be really good. And again, we'll get to that on the other side. Don't go anywhere. Coming up in about 45 minutes, we will have the Fast Five headlines and also give you guys a chance to win $1,000 in the Keyword to Cash contest, so make sure you stick around for that. And Matt Allen has been tasked with picking his Derby horse as far as which name he likes the best. So we'll see if he's able to come up with one before we wrap it up today. Don't go anywhere. You are in the Red Zone. We're fueled by Thorns right here on 790 KRD.
You're in the Red Zone with Nick Coffey on 790 KRD. Fueled by Thorntons. Share your thoughts on the LNN Federal Credit Union text line at 502-653-0790.
So Jack Harlow is going to be calling riders up at the Derby. I'm pretty sure he was supposed to do that last year, and there was a really awful situation, I think, that happened the night before the Derby where somebody was shot and killed at a Derby Eve party, and he was not involved or anything like that, but the person who was, I think, charged with that shooting was somebody that was affiliated with Harlow in some form or fashion. Might have been his DJ, but yeah, he's going to be back to do Riders Up this year. And without question, this guy is, I know a lot of you listening aren't into the hip-hop scene and the hip-hop culture and whatnot, but he is, he's about as big, I mean, he was featured at the Celtics game the other night. They had the camera on him on ABC. I mean, he's certainly a super celebrity at this point, and he's from right here in Louisville, and he actually is releasing an album on Friday, so there you go. All right, let's do one more of these Derby profiles.
You know, before you do that, though, and I know you say that, we did this the other day, with some celebrities, but there's at least one place he's not big, though, and you saw that, right?
No.
Jack Harlow.
Oh, the refs?
Yeah, not a big name in NBA referees. Here's yes. Scott Foster mic'd up during the Celtics-Bucks.
Who's Jack Harlow?
I don't know it is.
There's a guy over here, right here. He's in that white shirt behind you.
Yeah, who is he?
I don't know. Go ask him.
I don't know. That was funny. I think he had a Twitter response to that too, because that went viral. But yes, in fact, there's probably like those referees. What are they? Middle aged guys in their 40s or whatever. I would say that's probably not a demo that he's big in. They may not know the name, but some of his songs have become so. You know, What's Poppin' was the one that really became. It was his breakthrough hit where he had Lil Wayne get on it and do a remix with him, and that is when it hit a different level of reach just because. But, and he's also going to be in the remake of White Man Can't Jump. Like, that'll put him into a different, if that movie actually gets a lot of promotion and is a big film.
And you said he's playing Billy Ho, right?
Yeah. And I don't know if he's played basketball before, but I think he played soccer. He's got some athleticism. I think he played soccer at Atherton whenever
he's
he was
playing Wesley Snipes' part.
I don't know. It's a good question. But yeah, Jack Harlow doing Riders Up. All right, we'll go ahead and save this Derby profile of Zand until the 9 o'clock hour, just so we have, you know, just to make sure we have enough time to get it in. There's actually a lot I want to get to in this final hour, so we'll try to squeeze it in, make this last hour of the morning count. The increase in prices for hotels and Airbnbs. No surprise, it's more expensive when you are staying here during Derby Week. But just how much more expensive might surprise you. There's some numbers from the Louisville Business Journal I want to share with you. Because what people are staying, like for people who come in for a week, I mean, it's if you stay at like a night, in fact, really anywhere you stay for a week this week is going to be probably pretty expensive. I can't imagine that it's not. But there are people that have, and we'll get more into the numbers coming up at the 9 o'clock hour, but there are some, this is just a smart, savvy thing to do. But there are people that aren't from Louisville that are, I guess, are into real estate and investment properties, and they purchased Airbnbs. They purchased homes and rent them out for Airbnb, and they've admitted that, yeah, a good chunk of the year they're not booked because, you know, Louisville's not exactly a destination place for Airbnb, especially if it's a place like if you've got a house and you say, hey, this is your Derby house for the week with all your friends, that may not be as appealing to people in, you know, January or October. So I just found it interesting to hear quotes from these investors that purchased properties and rent them out throughout the year, and they go unbooked throughout half the year. But the amount of money they make for that on Derby Week more than pays for itself to where they're still turning a profit. That's just, to me, that's insane. But again, Derby's a big deal. There are people that come from all over the world, and they are willing to spend a lot of money to make it a great week here in the Derby City. So we'll get into that and a lot more. We'll reset the Amani Bates conversation. I think it's a no-brainer. Louisville should take the kid, and looks like they're going after him. And they are one of six schools in the running for a guy that at one point was compared to the, you know, was labeled as potentially the next Kevin Durant. So again, a loaded third hour is coming your way. Make sure you stick around. You are also going to have a chance to win $1,000 in the Keyword to Cash contest. All right, you are in the Red Zone. We're fueled by Thorns on 790 KRD.
You're in the Red Zone with Nick Coffey on 790 KRD, fueled by Thorntons.
Day two of Derby Week. We are now, 4 days away from the annual Kentucky Derby, and a lot of the coverage thus far is the obvious reminder that this will be the first time since 2019 we had what was a normal Derby. And with that said, they expect a ton of people to show up at Churchill Downs this week, and that's exciting. It really is. I'm going to try my best to, once Derby season concludes, to be able to put into words why it is such a special time. I mean, obviously, it's a horse race that, of course, is a big deal. But there's so much more to it than just that, and you have to be here to get it. You know, you can't if you've never experienced what it's like to be in Louisville during Derby season. You won't get it until you experience it for yourself. So, because I've lived here my whole life, you know, I don't normally. When I'm at Churchill Downs working Derby for WHAS, I just assume everybody there is from here because, again, I've been here my whole life. I go to Churchill Downs many times throughout the year. But there are so many people that come to this city for not just the day but maybe the week to experience this awesome environment that is, you know, Churchill Downs Derby season. It's awesome. It's good stuff. So today's weather, not good stuff. It's awful. I think it stopped raining now, but, man, it was disgusting this morning. We had to make a change of plans. I was going to be out there at Churchill Downs doing the show, but weather did not permit. So we'll see if that changes for tomorrow. Hopefully, weather is much better the rest of the week. In fact, it looks like tomorrow and Thursday, cloudy, but no rain. But unfortunately, going to rain on Friday and Saturday. In fact, since the show started 2 hours ago, the percentage chance of rain has already increased for Saturday. So we're at 40% now on Saturday, 80% on Friday, which would be the worst possible scenario, right? But maybe we get lucky. As you know, the weather can change, and I hope that's the case. I hope that's what happens. All right, you are in the Red Zone. We are fueled by Thorntons, and this is 790 KRD. Take us with you wherever you go with the iHeartRadio app. You can listen live at 790KRD.com. Coming up here in about 20 minutes, we're going to not only give you a chance to win $1,000, we'll also get to the Fast Five headlines. 502-653-0790 is the LNN Federal Credit Union text line. We'll try to empty out the text line before we say goodbye today. But if you are just now joining us, we did give you the latest on one of the most talked about transfers in the portal in college basketball, and that's Amani Bates, former phenom. Maybe he's still a phenom. I don't know. I guess it depends on who you talk to. In fact, there's one all the different outlets now, 24/7 Sports, ESPN, Stadium, Sports Illustrated, they all rank the available players in the portal. And I don't remember which one it was. It might have been 24/7 Sports that ranked Amani Bates as the number one player, number one prospect in the portal, which if you'd have said that a year ago, it would have made sense because this guy was the number one ranked player in the 2022 class for many years. And then he decided to reclassify to 2021, and he had an underwhelming season at Memphis. But there's still a lot of potential there, and it can't be overstated that he played high school, he played college basketball last year when he should have been a high school senior. And it wasn't as if he couldn't get on the floor. He averaged double figures, essentially, 9.8 points per game. So, yeah, he was underwhelming. The hype was at an insane level before he got to Memphis. So I get why there's some people that said, you know, maybe this guy's not as good as advertised. But if he's even close to as good as advertised for Louisville, they'd be getting a really good player. And last I checked, they've got four available scholarships. So Louisville is one of six schools that is in the mix here for Amani Bates. And Jeff Goodman, College Basketball Insider, he says it's going to come down to Louisville and Oregon. But the other schools are Michigan, Arkansas, Seton Hall, DePaul, and Eastern Michigan. I'm sorry, not Louisville and Oregon, Louisville and DePaul. The reason I mention Oregon is because DePaul is now coached by Tony Stubblefield, former Oregon assistant. So I'm probably connecting dots more so than I need to here because I'm not really sure how much Nike is involved in his decision. But he's obviously a Nike kid. He's been with Nike since his early AAU days. And Tony Stubblefield is the former Oregon. He's coached at Oregon for 11 years. Oregon is essentially Nike. They are the same thing, essentially, right? Phil Knight, the creator and founder of Nike, when you hear all about those Nike relationships with Oregon that we've heard Kenny Payne talk about, and obviously Josh Jamison, who was hired last week. So I'm well aware that I'm probably getting ahead of myself. But if Louisville's able to land Bates, one of Nike's biggest stars, at least on the high school circuit for many years, that would be the first sign that Kenny Payne was right, that his family-like relationship with Nike and the fact that they are Adidas' top partner, it really is best of both worlds. And that would be the first sign that, you know what, you might be able to hopefully get all the top-ranked Adidas guys because you're an Adidas guy. And I really don't see where Nike's going to go out of their way to help you get players, but because of their family-like relationship with Kenny Payne and Josh Jamison, they may not stop you from getting Nike players, which is, and by the way, this is a question that has come up, and I've never been able to really find the answer. What could a school do? Like, if Kenny Payne started getting all these Nike players that are on the EYBL circuit, and they're Nike through and through, they're loyal to the check mark, to the swoosh. If they come to Louisville and they just wanted to wear Nike shoes but wear Adidas gear because, of course, U of L's jerseys are Adidas, would they be allowed to do that? Like, we're still learning as we go throughout as far as what's allowed and what is not allowed in NIL. But, like, what would stop these kids from signing with Nike but going to an Adidas school? Now, you got to think Nike probably wouldn't want to sign a kid. They wouldn't go to a school that wears their brand. But like if it's a next level player that they know in the end the payoff is when they become a pro, they might be able to live with it. But anyways, Amani Bates is a name we've talked about here and there for the last couple of weeks, and it'll probably be talked about more now that we know Louisville's one of six schools. All right, we also talked about the scary situation here in Louisville this morning where a school bus with students in it. More than 20 students were on a school bus as it overturned. It sounds like we're 5 to 6 students taken to a hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. So just because the injuries aren't life-threatening doesn't mean it's that they aren't injured. So I'm not going to speculate on what the severity of the injury is. But yes, I can't imagine one being a kid on that school bus as it turned over, but also knowing you're a parent and one of your kids is on the school bus. So hopefully everybody is okay. That is a very, very scary, scary situation here in Louisville. All right, let's do the Derby profile for the favorites. So yesterday we had post positions that were drawn, and the favorite right now is the same as yesterday, from what I understand, and that is Zandon, trained by Chad Brown. 3-1 are the odds, and it drew post position number 10. Here is our own Jody Demling giving us the profile here of the favorite. Well, whoops. Here we go.
Now, a look at the Kentucky Derby field, one by one. Sandon.
Bluegrass Stakes winner Zandon is generating a ton of pre-race hype for the Kentucky Derby. Perhaps the most impressive prep race in the Bluegrass. He was dead last after six furlongs and came around to get the score for trainer Chad Brown. Zandon, a dark brown son of Upstart, is 2-1-1 in four career starts. He's been in the money all four races at four different tracks: Belmont, Aqueduct, Fairgrounds, and Keeneland. Zandon won his debut at Belmont, was second to Mo Donegal in the Remsen Stakes on December the 4th. Then, to start his three-road career, ran third in the Risen Star Stakes to Epicenter and Smile Happy. Brown then decided to take him to Keeneland, where he was impressive in the Bluegrass Stakes. Zandon got shuffled back, was dead last after six furlongs in the race, then came through, weaved through traffic, and won by 2.5 lengths.
He had been training really well. You know, he's never run a bad race. I knew he was lightly raced, but, you know, we had a lot of confidence going into the race. And, you know, he got shuffled back a little bit, and he had another challenging trip. But Flavio Bragg, really, first time on the horse, did a terrific job of biding his time and making the right decisions. And like you said, when he finally had an opening and he really accelerated through the stretch, I was real pleased with it. This horse had two challenging trips in a row now. In the Fairgrounds, the race before, he missed the break, and he had a lot of ground to make up, and it was a challenge trip. He got a lot of experience from it. It wasn't the outcome we wanted, but when we got home, we were appreciative for the experience he gained. Same thing in the Bluegrass. Although he broke a lot better, he got shuffled. It was a muddy track, and he got bumped around. And I'm hoping that experience really serves him well in the Derby.
Owner Jeff Drown will be making his first career Derby appearance. Trainer Chad Brown 0-6 in the Derby. He was second with Good Magic in 2018. Jockey Flavian Pratt 1-4 in the Derby. He won aboard Country House, who was placed first by disqualification in 2019. Zandon has trained well at Churchill Downs. He looks the part, and Chad Brown, he's very confident.
It'd be hard to argue that this is wouldn't be, you know, one of our best chances, if not the best horse we brought into the race. You know, we'll just have to see how it plays out. I mean, I think this horse would be right there with Together as our best two chances that we've brought to the Derby. And like I said, we just have to have a lot of things go our way.
So apparently I've been saying it incorrectly. It's Zandon, not Zandon. But either way, it is the betting line favorite. The other one we had, the other Derby profile, if you guys want to check it out when you listen to the podcast, was Tis the Bomb. 30-1 odds. Post position, let's see here. Post position number 9. Yeah, 30-1 odds. That's the one I'm going to put across the board. Why not, right? Just take a guess. If it ends up finishing in the top three, it'll pay decent. And then I'll eventually get to two horses that I'm going to box, but I don't know which ones I'm going to do just yet. Matt, do you have a name you like the most? I do feel like this field of horses, in regards to names alone, it's not as strong as we've seen in previous years.
Yeah, this may compare to the quarterbacked pool for this year's NFL draft.
I mean, it's ho-hum, right?
It's not awful, but there's usually there are one or two that I really like. Summer Is Tomorrow is close, but it's too long.
Yeah.
You know? And then I don't know why 19, there we go, 19 and 20 weren't showing up. Oh, yeah. Summer Is Tomorrow is too close. It's just too long. I got to be honest. I'm looking here again at the first 10. Well, no, these aren't in order of pole position, so.
What about Charge It? I can't tell if I like that or no.
No. Is Barber Road a... Is he related to Barbaro? Is that sort of a play on words?
Would make sense if it was, but I do not know.
Okay. I don't know either. I was just asking.
I have a friend whose last name is Barber, so I may get in on that one.
I mean, Smile Happy's okay, but it's just it doesn't roll off the tongue.
It doesn't sound good. Pioneer of Medina.
No.
What about Simplification?
That's okay.
Cyberknife.
I kind of like Ethereal Road.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. Summer is Tomorrow is so close. There's just something.
I would say that's the best name, though.
Nah, I don't know.
What's better than it?
Well, that's true.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, Tis the Bomb isn't terrible.
It's just too long, though. It's too long. Like, you know what I'm saying? A lot of times I imagine, sometimes it doesn't matter, but sometimes when the name isn't great, it's just something a little bit off about it. You imagine the Derby call. And you imagine whoever's making the call saying the horse, you know, wins the Kentucky Derby, and he doesn't sound like a Derby winner.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I'm gonna say Ethereal Road slightly over Summer is Tomorrow. If Summer is Tomorrow was just worded a little differently, that would definitely be my pick. I just don't know how I would change it.
Is it Mo Donegal?
Mo Donegal?
Donegal? I don't know how you pronounce that. By the way, that horse, that's in the number one post spot with 10 to 1 odds. That's one of the other, I don't know, it's not the top choice, but certainly has better odds than the majority of the field here. So we'll see. I say we'll see as if I'm going to do a lot of analysis, and I'm not. But I'll pick two eventually before we say goodbye for the week, and you guys can do what you want. If you want to take any pick from my end, my daughter's got a good streak going where she didn't win it last year, but the first 3 or 4 years of her life, she would pull a name out of a hat, and that horse won, I think, 3 or 4 years in a row. So just keep that in mind.
I think the best two are Summer is Tomorrow and Ethereal Road. But there have been derbies where I thought my third pick would probably be better than those two. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I don't hate those names. They're just not great.
Yeah, I'm gonna look up the because there's races running today at Churchill. I'm sure we'll go through some of those races and there'll be much better names. Yeah, just a pretty down year for names alone. But hey, that'll when it comes to giving thoughts, opinions, analysis, whatever you want to call it on horse racing, I got nothing for you guys. So I'm not even gonna try to fake it. Can't do it. All right. You want to know how expensive it is to stay in Louisville during Derby Week? Very expensive. Obviously, you can get cheaper prices depending on where you go with like hotels and stuff, but this is wild.
I'm finding it really cheap to stay in Louisville this week.
Well, at your own place, yes.
Oh, well, you didn't say.
Yeah.
To
visit.
For visitors.
Yeah, visitors.
Okay. I mean, normal price for me.
Visitors in Louisville this week, the Airbnb, the average price, it rose 340%. So a typical night at a Louisville Airbnb averages about $334, which, geez, I mean, that's the average night. Then you must be staying at a nice place that's an Airbnb, which, by the way, I've never done an Airbnb before. Not against it. I just have always just – when we go out of town, we usually stay at a hotel, not an Airbnb. But if it's cheaper – I've always just heard some bad stories about Airbnbs. So anyways, the average night was $334 per night, non-Derby time. Right now, rental rates are averaged at about $1,481 for per night for Derby weekend. And this is this price increase is the second highest price increase of all 2022 events. So keep that in mind. There's all kinds of places that host big events, and when those events are going on, the prices to stay somewhere skyrockets. This is the second highest price increase of any event. Now, I'm curious. It doesn't say here what the highest price increase was for the other event, but 340% increase. It says here that there's some this story at Louisville Business Journal. It mentions these co-owners of this company that they own a hospitality branch, and they have different properties all across the country where they rent out Airbnbs, and I'm sure they make really good money. But they just opened up for bookings in March here in the area for Derby. And to rent one of their spots for Derby weekend, I guess that's Friday and Saturday, it is $2,950, which is insane. But there'll be people that pay it because it's the Kentucky Derby and it's a big deal to a lot of folks. All right, before we give away $1,000 and get to the Fast Five headlines, a couple things I wanted to hit on here. One, I didn't mention this yesterday, but Caleb Glenn, Louisville commit at a male high school, he is going to leave male for his senior season and go play at Lalumiere. I think that is the name of the high school. It's a prep school up in Indiana. For those wondering if this is something you need to be concerned about when it comes to his recruitment, I would say no, because I think he's doing this just because it's more exposure. So he's playing on the EYBL circuit. I'm not sure which team he's playing for. He played for the Bradley Beal Elite last year. I'm not sure which school he's playing with this year. But this school is up in northern Indiana, and it's essentially a private school that's a basketball factory. I mean, they have had some of the best players in America in high school have ended up transferring to finish their high school career there. Isaiah Stewart, Jordan Poole, who's playing for the Warriors, Jaren Jackson, Tiger Campbell, Brian Bowen also played there, James Banks. So they've had Jeremy Sochin, who just played at Baylor and is now going to be a lottery pick. So this actually speaks – this really tells you what kind of summer, spring Caleb Glenn is having right now, because he will play a national schedule. I think some of their games are going to be on like ESPN. So I don't think you need to worry about his commitment to Louisville. I think he's doing this because he wants to play tougher competition than what he would play in the 7th region over at Male High School. Not that that's weak competition, but yeah, he's going to leave Male High School, and who knows, maybe he'll end up playing well against that type of competition. I don't see why he won't, because he's a really good player. Maybe he ends up being, you know, maybe he sees a bump in the ranking, which, yeah, right now, Caleb Glenn, again, he's in the 2023 class, so he has one more year left. He committed to Chris Mack and has maintained his commitment throughout the coaching change. Right now, in the 24/7 sports composite, he's a four-star player ranked 57th in the country. So, again, maybe he ends up getting a nice little boost there after playing when he plays on a much more competitive level. All right, what else was there? Something else I wanted to get to. We can save this for tomorrow. It's not time sensitive, but the article that Matt Fortuna wrote about Louisville football was very optimistic. I guess I can just give you some. If you haven't checked it out, you should, and you should pay for The Athletic. It's really good stuff. It's very cheap, and they do a great job. But Matt Fortuna, essentially, what he was saying is, when looking at Louisville's personnel, they have no weakness, and I don't necessarily agree with that, because I think their defense is a weakness, and I think Tyler Harrell will be missed more so than most realize. I know he didn't have a ton of catches last year, but I mean, he's just a weapon that you can't replace his speed. Now, they've got other guys that can step in. I know the transfer from Central Arkansas receiver, they think he's going to be a really big weapon for them. But they're really, really solid up front on the offensive line. They did lose Cole Bentley, but Caleb Chandler comes back, and he's somebody actually asked this question the other day on the text line, is which Louisville player do you think will be drafted first next year, if any? And it'll be Caleb Chandler. I don't think he could have been drafted this year if he decided to go pro. But at running back, I think they're set. They've got Travion Cooley, who really came on last year, decided to stick around. I mean, they're loaded. Jahar Jordan, the guy who transferred from Syracuse and didn't really play at all till the end of the year, he sounds like he had a really good spring. Quarterback there, you know, they need some. If Malik goes down, look out, yikes. But, you know, he is one of the better quarterbacks in the ACC. And on defense, yes, they've got guys that are coming back from injury. Keitrell Clark at corner. You know, they've got some names that when you look back to, I mean, like, for example, that's why I always say, when it comes to the defense, I can't tell you they're the most talented defense and that they've got as much talent as they'd want, because you want depth, and I think they need to be bigger up front. But some of the defensive struggles last year I don't think was talent related. And that's why it was so frustrating to see them never bringing pressure and letting quarterbacks sit back there all day and just pick you apart. They never made any adjustments. And usually when they did, it was too late. So I can't look at a defense that finished 83rd in total defense out of 130 FBS teams and say that there's no weakness. I mean, you know, they're going to have to replace C.J. Avery, and that won't be easy. I know Monty Montgomery is going to be back. He's healthy. He's a really good player. Ashton Gelati was a really, really good – had a really good start to his career last year as a true freshman. He can get to the quarterback a little bit. So the more I look at just the personnel, it's another reminder that, yeah, Satterfield needs to have – he has the personnel to wear with this schedule. It's not a super easy schedule by any means, but you should be able to win – 7-8 games in the regular season. I don't think that's asking too much. And it's crazy. If you go look at the offense, I know in 2020 they turned it over way too much, and that was a really down year. But in 3 years, but even in that year when they turned the ball over, like, they still moved it down the field. They still moved the ball down the field enough to win a lot of games. They just coughed it up. Last year, I think the offense did its part in most games, but the defense let them down over and over. And if we're going to evaluate Scott Satterfield overall, we have to evaluate the defense as well, because although he's not believed to be a defensive head coach, he hired Brian Brown, and he decided to keep him around for year four. So that's on him. But on offense, I know there's always plays you can go back and question the play calling, and they're far from flawless. But offensively, under Scott Satterfield throughout 3 years, I think they have been good enough. In fact, they've been pretty damn good if you just look at the amount of yards per play. They have really good balance on offense. I think he's a good play caller. I really do. Offensively, I don't have many issues with Scott Satterfield. It's just the defense has been a big issue, and here's to hoping that it gets better. Because we're not just used to the offense having to score 35 points to potentially win a game. And that's not normal. You should be able to lean on your defense in certain games and win it that way. And they haven't been able to do that. All right, headlines are coming up next. But first, your shot at $1,000 right now in the Keyword to Cash contest.
You're in the Red Zone with Nick Coffey on 790 KRD. Fueled by Thorntons. Share your thoughts on the LNN Federal Credit Union text line at 502-653-0790.
Congratulations to whoever it was that was the winner of $1,000. You'll have many other chances throughout the day. In fact, every hour up until 5 p.m., after the first commercial break, that'll be your next opportunity to participate. So again, best of luck to you. And if you haven't won yet, that just means you're due.
It's time for the Fast Five headlines with the marvelous Matt Allen.
Number one.
From the Right Where We Belong department, it's our daily check on the NBA, and game one for the top seeds went just like they were supposed to. Miami, without Kyle Lowry, beat Philadelphia without Joel Embiid, 102-96. And the Phoenix Suns looked good again.
Yeah, they did.
They looked really good. The Phoenix Suns that bulldozed through the regular season, according to this report from the AP, made an appearance Monday night. DeAndre Ayton scored 25. Devin Booker added 23. And the Suns never trailed, jumping out 9-0. In the opening minutes, they shot over 50% from the field and out-rebounded the Mavs by 15 and beat the Mavs for the 10th straight time, counting all their matchups, including in the regular season. And they won 121-114. Luka had 45-12-8, but it was the first second-round game ever for him in his four-year NBA career, but he lost. And they're both number one seeds up. 1-0. The NBA playoffs will continue tonight with game twos. It's the 2-3 series on TNT. Milwaukee and Boston, and Milwaukee will try to go up 2-0 on the road there, just like the Warriors trying to go up 2-0 on the road at 9:30 on TNT against the Grizzlies.
Yeah, the Suns looked good last night. I mean, Chris Paul, I don't know, you know, I'm thinking of him because when I went to sleep, it was right after he made a bucket, and I don't even know what his numbers were. So if he had a poor game overall, I apologize. But I mean, he's got to be up there as far as one of the best point guards of all time, right? Like that. In fact, I think that's what J.J. Redick and Stephen A. and the Mad Dog were yelling about last week about Paul. But like, I don't think you can dispute that Chris Paul. And look, even before. His value showed so much when he went to OKC, what was that, 2 years ago, Matt, when he was there for a year and they actually made the playoffs and were pretty good. And then he goes to Phoenix. And look, he's not – I mean, hell, you could probably – I mean, Booker and Ayton are still probably the two best players on that – like the two most important pieces maybe. But Paul's a big factor as well. And I was just thinking last night as I was going to sleep, like he's – as far as point guards that I've watched their career in their entirety from start to finish and – who knows? He doesn't look like he's slowing down anytime soon, even though he's getting older. But he's probably the best point guard I've ever watched. As far, you know, John Stockton was great, but, you know, he got at the league before I was born. But, yeah, this I think if Phoenix gets healthier throughout, they're going to be a tough out. But, of course, Golden State's playing really well, too. But, yeah, as we discussed yesterday, injuries have no doubt been a big storyline here so far in the NBA playoffs, which sucks. Number two.
From the status quo department, the NFL said Monday an independent review found no evidence to substantiate allegations made by former Cleveland Browns head coach Hugh Jackson that the team intentionally lost games in the 2016 and 2017 season. Jackson, of course, fired by the Browns owners 8 games into the 2018 season after he went 3-36-1 in 2-plus years. It's been one of the bigger NFL stories of the year so far. Jackson indicated in a series of posts on social media that the team paid him bonuses, incentivizing him to lose, and that he was set up to fail. He later softened those allegations, but the NFL announced after a 60-day review, independent investigators led by SEC Chair, that's Securities and Exchange Commission, not the Southeastern Conference, Mary Jo White, determined that none of the allegations could be substantiated. The league said that Jackson initially agreed to meet with the investigators, but ultimately didn't. The NFL said that Jimmy Haslam, which is one of the Browns owners, was interviewed, as well as other current and former members of the organizations. The Browns apparently also provided documents to help the investigators. So the independent investigation comes down on the side of management.
Yeah, I mean, is Hugh Jackson, why did I think he wasn't one of those coaches that made an appearance for or the USFL? I know there's a bunch of former coaches they brought back. I don't think he was one of them. But, I mean, I'm not surprised this played out the way that it did. And also, just looking here at his Wikipedia, I didn't realize he'd been gone from the Browns for that long. He hasn't coached there since 2018. For some reason, I feel like he was just recently there. The Browns go through so many coaches. They've had Freddie Kitchens after him and then whoever they have now. But, yeah, Browns. That was back when the Browns were, you know, a joke. And now, this past year, I still think they were probably the best team that nobody – we didn't get to see them at their full potential because they had so many injuries. But now they've got Deshaun Watson. They've got a bunch of weapons. And I don't know if you heard if – I'm not sure if this ever took off, but there was talks that Odell Beckham may want to go back to Cleveland now that Baker Mayfield's gone. So, number three.
From the that didn't happen department, Giancarlo Stanton made maybe, at least some people are saying, the catch of the year so far in the MLB season. What?
I got to see this.
The catch of the year so far in the MLB season. Well, I mean, he made it, but not according to John Sterling. Let's check in on WCBS Radio.
Pitch, 1-2, swung on, hit the air to right. Back goes Stanton on the track at the wall, leaping, and she is gone. It is a home run. They're all waiting. And why are they waiting?
Because Stanton caught the ball.
coming off the field is Chapman. Stanton never threw the ball back in.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did.
Stanton,
I watched it.
Just robbed Chapman of a home run. Wow. What a play by Stanton.
Yeah, what a play, John. Thanks for showing up.
All right, so in all seriousness, last night when I was watching the NBA, I don't remember what play it was, but I wrote down, in my notes app here, I wrote down, announcers need better views. And it was something in the NBA game because it was like, there's no way they're looking at what we're looking at when they say what they see sometimes unless they're blind. And this is another example of that. How did he not, like, what could he not see that we could see right there on, with? I mean, is there a chance he's not looking at a monitor? He's looking actually with his eyeballs, and he's far away?
He might be looking with his eyeballs.
Now, John Sterling is a legend, right?
He's been around a while.
I mean, is this a common kind of mistake for him?
Remember, we had one, I mean, it's called like a couple weeks ago.
That was him?
Yeah, same guy.
Oh.
He's not having a great year so far.
What are his corny, the Grandy Man can?
Yeah, right. Some other ones. All Rise for Aaron Judge.
I think that's badass. I think that's badass.
Yeah.
He makes mistakes, but he's just got a sound, a delivery that is, there's a reason he's been there a long time. He's good, but everybody makes mistakes. Number four.
Four walls to hear me.
From the That's Uncomfortable department, Lydia Ko was playing in the Palos Verdes Championship on the LPGA, and she was vying for the lead, but her back had been bothering her, so she brought in her physiotherapist, Chris Wicker, to help her try and get over the hump there and win the Palos Verdes Championship. And she ended up, I think, two shots back of the lead. Yeah, two strokes shy of winning the tournament. And so here is, she was speaking with Golf Channel's Jerry Foltz after the round. And Jerry asked her about that, you know, bringing in, get the back treatment, trying to get things on the up and up. And we always ask, Nick always asks, he likes it when sports figures are honest. Lydia Ko, she was honest.
You asked for Chris Wicker to come out and give you a little physical therapy as well. Is that a concern moving forward?
I hope not. It's that time of the month. I know the ladies watching are probably like, yeah, I got you. So when that happens, my back gets really tight and I'm all twisted. And it's not the first time that Chris has seen me twisted. But it felt a lot better after he came. So, yeah, there you go.
thanks.
I know you lost for words, Jerry.
Yeah.
Honesty it is.
Honesty it is. She was honest.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if any man watching that ahead of time had the same, I guess, theory that she claims women might have had. You know what I mean? Because I guess they can relate, whereas we can't. But, yeah, I've never once thought, I mean, poor Jerry.
You can tell. He said, what's he supposed to say? You saw what he said at the end of thanks.
Thanks. Number five.
All right, Nick. We're going to go to the rhyme time department, and that means it's time for a red zone trivia break.
Let's do it.
May 1st, this week, was National Mother Goose Day. You have kids, Nick.
I
don't know if they still do this anymore, but we're going to see how much you know.
All right.
All right, we're going to see how much you know. We're going to have you finish these and see how many you get right.
All right.
Mother Goose Day. Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men.
Something about Humpty again?
Close. Couldn't put Humpty together again.
Okay.
That's 0 for 1. I'm not going to give you that.
Yeah, I don't deserve it.
Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. Jack fell down and broke his crown.
I have no clue.
You have no clue?
No. Jack and Jill went up the hill.
To
That's
fetch
all
a pail
I know.
Of water. Jack fell down and broke his crown. And Jill came tumbling after.
I would never have known.
You've
that.
Never heard that.
I probably have, but
okay.
You know.
Well, they're going to get harder from here.
Are they?
Old Mother Hubbard went to the cupboard to fetch her poor dog a bone. But when she came there, the cupboard was bare.
Old Mother Hubbard, you say?
Yeah.
I don't know much about
her. You've never
heard
of Old Mother Hubbard?
I feel like I've heard that name, but I don't. I think this is probably showing the age difference between you and I. And it's not that it's massive. It's just
I wouldn't have gotten this one, though. I would have gotten Jack and Jill and Humpty Dumpty, but I would not have gotten this one.
I should have known Humpty Dumpty.
The end is, and so the poor dog had none. You can get this one.
All right.
You've heard about this lady. There was an old woman who lived in the shoe. She had so many children. Old woman who lived in the shoe?
No clue.
There was an old woman who lived in a shoe. She had so many children. What would it rhyme? What would rhyme there? These all rhyme. There was an old woman who lived in a shoe.
What are we rhyming? Shoe?
She had so many children.
More than she knew?
I don't know. That's not bad.
I don't know Old Mother Hubbard.
Know,
I don't know woman shoe.
She didn't know what to do.
All right, okay.
Last one. Three blind mice, three blind mice. See how they run. See how they run. They all ran after the farmer's wife.
I've heard three blind mice.
Three blind mice.
I don't know
this one's usually I hear this one usually sung. Three blind mice, three blind mice. See how they run. See how they run. They all ran after the farmer's wife, who cut off their tails with a carving knife.
I don't think I've ever heard that.
All right. Well,
we tried. I missed them all. You're right. They did get harder as they went along. I definitely didn't know Old Mother Hubbard. The woman in the shoe. But
clearly, the Mother Goose is out of style for the younger generation.
That's the kind of thing that, like you, people are listening, is like, how do you not know that? Which I guess I just didn't.
Age gap.
Yeah, that's got to be what it is. All right, we'll be back. All right, so we've got a little bit of, I think, the breaking news here, and that is that Cincinnati, Houston, and Central Florida are negotiating a $17 to $20 million settlement to join the Big 12 for the upcoming season.
Wow, and that would give them an odd number, right? 13?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that would mean they'd be, for at least a few years, having a chance to play against...
say them again, Cincinnati, Houston, and who?
UCF, Central Florida. So... I don't think we have time for famous birthdays, do we?
No, we do not.
Up against it. You guys have a good day. We'll talk to you tomorrow. No good birthdays today anyway. All right, stay safe. Back at it tomorrow morning right here on 790 KRD. Extreme world alone. Or did you ever like it then? Oh, I would stand in line for this.